Get ready to take off with Dynamic Golf. Welcome back, Dynamic Golf listeners. I am your co-host, Tim McElmanna. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Sean Klotz. Sean, who do we have today? Tell us, please.
Hey, T-Mac. Hey, Dynamic Golf listeners. This is just an exciting guest for us. We love starting to get some more of our North Florida PGA brethren on the podcast. And today we've got one of our good friends, Tim Baker. Known Tim for about 20 years in all told, which is pretty crazy.
Wow.
And Tim Baker, we're happy to have you. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing all right, guys. Truly appreciate you both having me, and glad to be here to discuss some things with you all today.
Great. So, good. So, Tim, glad to have you here. I know you're out in the car right now, so we really love that the commitment to it. So thank you so much for being here with us. Kind of getting things started a little bit. Can you kind of explain a little bit about your background and your career path into the PGA of America a little bit for our listeners, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's crazy to say this, but golf has been the only industry I've ever worked in.
Wow.
It all started way back when I became really close friends with the director of golf and his son at Seven Springs Golf and Country Club. And we spent many of our summers off of school hanging in the back bag room until Mr. Steve Revines decided to tell us to get to the range or go walk the exec or something and get out of there and stop bothering him. But play golf, my entire life. My dad was a really good golfer. But just being around those guys at the course every day as a youngster, I always kind of had a passion for the game and for the business, even at a young age. And then ended up taking my first job at Seven Springs when I was 15 years old as bag room attendant and cart, range attendant as well. Continued working there for many years until I went off to college. Actually went to college on a soccer scholarship. And then after breaking my leg three times my freshman year, the doctor said, I don't think soccer's going to be it for you anymore.
Wow.
With that being said, I decided to kind of pack it up, decided to leave college, and got back to golf and got in the PGA. And that's when the career started off, when the professional golf management program of the PGA and worked towards my Class A. Worked at several different clubs along the way. Wanted to kind of experience a bunch of different types of clubs, whether it be public, semi-private, resort, different facilities like that, to kind of find my niche and my fit. That's where it all kind of started off. And here I am today, several years later, got the Class A and on my way, man.
That's great. That's great. And you just took on a new job at what new facility?
Yeah. So, got some pretty big shoes to fill. Currently, I will call myself the interim head golf professional at Isla del Sol Yacht and Country Club, St. Pete Beach. There's been you want to talk about some pros. This man's a pro amongst pros. Fred Curtis has been there since 1984 as the director of golf.
Wow.
One heck of a guy. Finally is deciding to hang it up. He's going to work through the season. I'm there working along with him, and then I will be taking over his position as director of golf when he decides to retire in May or June, in that time frame.
Gotcha.
So Tim, Tim Baker, I got to call him. We got two Tims going on today. So we got T-Mac and Tim Baker.
There we go.
Tim, how I got to ask this question. I have a ballpark. How old are you? And kind of like, also, when did you get your PGA card?
Yeah, so I'm 41 now.
Okay.
I got my Class A when I was 25 years old. When I was 26, I took my first head golf professional job at Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. And worked there for a long time. Put in 15 years there. Did have a stint where I decided to leave for a little bit. and venture off trying to really go work at clubs that, we'll say, needed a little help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get them back afloat and stuff. And I'll say it's the best, worst decision I ever made. Best decision because I learned so much from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Worst decision because you have to do it without a budget, which means you have to work a ton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yep. it was awesome though. It was well worth it.
So T-Mac, we used to have like the Florida State Golf inter club matches.
Yeah.
Each year, mm-hmm. right at Silverado, and nobody wanted to play Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club because their handicaps were like, because the golf course is hard, so they would travel so well.
Yeah.
Roger Flaherty and all those boys and stuff up there at Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club, and Tim would come over, and I remember having some matches against him and just having such a good time playing with him and then maybe one of his members. And it's funny, and I don't mind saying this in front of Tim Baker, but like, now I'm 54, Tim, so I can, like, you've matured so much. Does that make any sense to you? You probably would say the same thing.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that definitely comes in time, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say the time it all changed for me was when I had my daughter, when she was born. That puts life into perspective, and, you know, all of a sudden, you're not number one anymore, you know?
Yep.
So
how old is she now? How old is she now?
11 and in sixth grade.
Unbelievable. That's crazy. Now, do you have any more kids, Tim?
No way. Stopped at one.
Okay. But
yep.
But we got three PGA guys who all have daughters. This is the kind of funny part of this conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I got three daughters. Mine are 25, 23, and 20. And then T-Mac's got two. How old are yours, T-Mac? Eight?
They are six and three. You know, six going on 16.
Yeah. So Tim Baker, it's such a perspective change, right? You just, priorities don't matter anymore. You almost sometimes don't want to go practice because you'd rather be home with your kid and go to Disney World or go to the park or something. Is that something that kind of happened to you too?
Oh yeah. Golf became, you know, I'm not even going to say second. It was not a priority, period.
Right.
I truly love being a father, and that mm-hmm. is the most important thing to me, without a doubt. So there was several years there where I stopped playing golf for the most part. You know, maybe would play with the members every once in a while if I had the chance during the daytime. But when I got done working, I just wanted to go home and be dad.
Yeah.
You know, they grow up so fast that you want to cherish those moments, and I never wanted to miss anything. And I really never have. You know, I'm sure there's going to be that time, or there's the one or two things that you miss along the way, but you always want to make sure you're there to not miss anything as much as you can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think Tim, like, it's such the thing that me and T-Mac are trying to do is kind of give the listeners, like, the insight, the background into becoming PGA Tour, you know, PGA members, kind of the behind the scenes that happens on a day-to-day basis of what we do. And we are the ambassadors of the game. We are the people that are promoting the game, whether it be through junior golf, interclub matches, even just the daily interaction we have with the membership.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I think, you know, that's why I talked to T-Mac. I'm like, if we could get Tim Baker on, that's just such a good get, because you are that guy. Yeah, like, yeah. I remember you when you were 26 coming over to Silverado and us playing, and you know, and I've talked to you throughout the years, and you just blossomed, and I just mean that as a true compliment. I really think you're one of the better people that I know in the PGA. So,
good.
Yeah, truly, truly appreciate that. You know, and as a golf professional, you know as well as I do, you can make work really fun to go to each and every day, and having the right golf professional is very important. The right blend of the right professional for the clientele and matching them up is very important to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Tim, so that's, can you kind of talk a little bit about your involvement with the PGA section and some of the roles that you've played throughout the years? I know you've been the section president. Can you explain a little bit about that for us, please?
Yeah, not section president. I served as a chapter officer.
Okay.
So I served all 6 years in all the roles. You know, I had the opportunity to work for Tom McCone, who did go through as a chapter officer when I was an assistant professional. And one of the biggest things to me was I want to get involved with the PGA as quickly and as early as I can. So while, yes, I did have to sacrifice some time away from my kid, it was well worth it for the growth of me as a golf professional to see every different avenue other than just being the head pro at a club. I wanted to kind of learn the back end working. So I ran for secretary. I was elected as the secretary in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Served 2 years as secretary, 2 years as vice president, 2 years as president until 2022 when I finished my term. And, you know, that was through a lot of the COVID years. The heavy COVID. So it was a different time back then. You know, everything changed. I got to serve with a lot of great people. You know, Matt Boros, who is now our section president and also the general manager at TPC Sawgrass. He's a heck of a guy. The contacts that you get to meet through that process was probably the most valuable thing I would say that I took away from it. But really learning the ins and outs. Now, you are heavily involved as a chapter officer within section stuff.
Gotcha.
So, you know, as time goes on, you know, I plan on possibly running as a section officer next. But this was great groundwork to kind of get you there. But yeah, it entails a little bit of everything, you know, because you have three people representing, you know, 400 golf professionals of your entire chapter. So you're the voice for all of them. So it's, while it's a great thing to do, sometimes it's not always the funnest thing, shall we say, to do. You know, because as we know in this industry, you're never going to make decisions that everyone's going to agree with or be pleased with. But you have to look at the grouping as a whole. You know, what's in the best interest of all of our professionals, not just, you know, a selected few or not just the players. You got to look at the business side of it, too, and kind of go from there. Those years were great doing all that, being involved in that. You know, when it comes to that, you know, you're setting up event tournament schedules.
Mm-hmm.
You're voting on bylaws. And these bylaws are some of the section bylaws that you're going through. And you're working on, you know, how to promote the game, how to grow the game. During the COVID years, guys, I mean, golf took a huge boom.
Yeah.
I would say if COVID did anything good, it was for the game of golf.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Correct.
But our big thing was, okay, now that we captured this audience, how do we keep this audience? Because I think anybody who plays a game of golf knows that in the very beginning, back in the day, it was kind of known as a rich person sport.
Yeah.
It's not the cheapest sport in the world to play. So it's like, how do we keep these people around? And I think y'all know as well as I do, if anything, we've seen an influx in pricing everywhere, but also in golf too, because of the demand now.
Mm-hmm.
It's so really unbelievable as far as like from the, you know, merchandising side. You know, I had my store in Tampa, the One Stop Golf Shop, and then kind of did some virtual golf simulators because the demand for at home golf became a thing. You know, that was not a thing really prior to maybe 2020 was the boom of that, because now you got at-home workers and it changed the dynamic of how people work in the industry, in the industry in general. And that's, just for the record, that's why I was 4 minutes late for our podcast today, listeners, because we were doing an install into the Meadows Public Golf Course up in Peabody, Mass, two golf simulators. And my point of all that is, it's funny, Tim and T-Mac, I feel like it's swaying back to the other side, meaning when you do have drivers coming out at 699 and 649 and fairways and, you know, hybrids at 350 and 299, yeah, they're not doing a great job. But and we're not doing a great job of keeping the generation that, that Tiger brought to the game, the sort of inner city underprivileged kids. We're not doing a great job of that, you know, of growing it. I'm not, it's not our problem to solve today, but it's just kind of a an interesting thing to maybe discuss a little bit in this forum. Kind of what you guys think about where that's going.
Well, I mean, I can tell you what has been a great thing for the game of golf and for juniors of the game of golf is drive, chip, and putt. And I've been pretty heavily involved in drive, chip, and putt. And that is a phenomenal thing that has been created for the younger generation, without a doubt. I don't know if any of you guys have been involved or got to do any of them, but to see the reactions of these kids when they hit a great chip or knock one in or knock a putt in, I mean, there's nothing better than that. Y'all should probably know that as being parents, right? To see that reaction is just unbelievable. But, you know, honestly, golf, when I was even playing at a younger age, it was kind of, I don't mean to say this and hopefully nobody takes it the wrong way. It was kind of like the dorky sport. And it's not, viewed as that anymore, in my opinion.
No, Tiger, Bryson, all these guys making it fun and cool and get it as far as you can and all that type of stuff. No, it's definitely changed. And even Liv, or we don't have enough time to talk about Liv for, but some of the, you know, some of the things that they've brought to the game. So no, you're right. And then, you know, as a in the same respect, PGA Junior League, you know, First Tee, I mean, there are definitely organizations that are, that you just got to maybe seek them. Now, again, it's funny, I'm a little bit jaded now because I work up in Boston, maybe 6 miles away from downtown Boston. A lot of money up here. So I don't see the First Tee as prevalent as I did in Florida, in the Tampa, Zephyr Hills, sort of that area. You know, it's different. So that's kind of what I'm saying about being a little jaded.
Gotcha. But, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's kids or parents will spend money for their kids to get involved in stuff, right? And I will say junior golf back in the day didn't have what it does now. Right. And you know, it was football, it was baseball, it was soccer, it was you know, you start seeing those sports. But I think now, like Sean mentioned, PGA Junior League is also another thing that is taking off like wildfire. So golf has always been known as an individual sport, and PGA Junior League has changed that. You know, it's brought it into a team sport at the younger age, and I think that is probably one of the greatest things that have also been created along with drive, chip, and putt. Where that one is the individual aspect of it, but PGA Junior League is the team aspect of it, and you know, I think that helps watch the younger generation start following things like the Ryder Cup, President's Cup, Solheim Cup, things in that nature.
Absolutely. So speaking of charitable works and stuff like that, what are some big things that you've done for the chapter, you know, with your enhancements and benefits to the operation there? What are some of the things that you've done there, Tim? What did move forward?
When I was serving as a chapter officer, when I was vice president, Matt Jordan was our president. Matt Jordan was at Stream Song at the time. And now Matt Jordan, he'll be hosting his own Ryder Cup.
Olympic
years,
Club, right?
Years down the road. He's at the Olympic Club. So, when you talk about people like that, that's probably the greatest contact that I've made through serving as a chapter officer is getting to know Matt Jordan. He's a very intelligent man and a awesome mentor to have. I still pick up the phone and call him whenever I have questions about different things.
Such a good guy too. Like just very like, you know, he doesn't come off as arrogant by any means, always willing to help and talk. And that was what I few interactions with him, but every time was always good with that. So keep going, sorry.
No worries whatsoever. But Matt Jordan had a great idea. You know, going through schooling through the PGM program of the PGA of America, there are expenses. And you know, some people have tough time paying tuitions. It's, you know, it's the College of Golf, we'll call it. So he came up with an idea for the West Central chapter, to let's create an assistance foundation and let's start giving away scholarship grants. So as he came up with this idea, we partnered with the Gary and Donna Koch Family Foundation, for the West Central chapter, because we as a chapter can't personally give out the money because of annulment. So we partnered with his charity, to do this, and they're the ones who actually give out the scholarship grants. So this program went off great, was successful while Matt was president. And then when I took over, we had another 2 years, where it went great. And then unfortunately, as my time came up a couple years after that, kind of struggled. So I had two entry-level assistants at Tampa Bay that they passed their PAT, but they didn't have the money up front to go ahead and enroll in the program. So I reached out to the section and I said, hey, you know, what do we got going on that could help, you know, fund these guys, so they can go ahead and get going on their program stuff? Mm-hmm. So, well, we don't really have much. The Assistance Foundation's kind of gone to the wayside. And I said, well, what if I take it back over and I get this thing going again? I said, yeah, sure, go ahead. So reached out to our chapter president and he said, yeah, let's do this. So I said, okay, I'm going to take this thing and run with it. So who was my first call? Obviously Gary Koch, an awesome guy and who has done so much, for the Tampa Bay area and a lot of first tee program mainly. But has done so much more than that. And he said, Tim, I'd love to partner with you again. I said, okay, what do you think if we were to put a tournament together and we try to raise money and we'll use this money to issue scholarship grants? He said, absolutely. So last year I said, I'm gonna give this a shot. And I hosted the first Gary and Donna Koch Charity Scramble at Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club last December. I literally put this thing together in only 2.5 months time. It was a smashing hit. It got a lot of support. And after, you know, all the bills were paid, shall we say, we raised just under $9,000, wow. which was awesome. So this year, obviously, I got all the events going. We host educational opportunities throughout the year for assistance at these other clubs to come to. Mm-hmm. We do workshops to where, you know, we hosted one over at Southern Hills where they got to come and do all their lesson stuff where they had to videotape a pro giving a lesson. They got all their angle shots, all their questions answered. We did another one on, player development over at, out in Lakeland at Lone Palm. Hmm. And then we did another one on golf cart fleet management, at St. Pete Country Club. So we try to hit these areas and then different areas within the chapter. But these assistants, they have to attend at least two of these meetings. And then we always put on a little golf tournament for them afterwards, which we used the money that we raised to give them money to play for, which was awesome. So,
as they
came through and did these things, all they had to pay for was their lunch. There was no expense to these professionals attending this stuff.
That's great.
If they met the specific qualifications, they had an opportunity to earn $1,000 scholarship grant. Very excited to say that we're hosting the Gary and Donico Charity Scramble again this December at Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. And we will be handing out over $6,000 in scholarship grants to assistant professionals from our chapter. So
very cool. Very cool.
Do you guys have a website or anything that maybe an assistant maybe listen to it might go to, or just go to the chapter website? Where could somebody get a little bit more information about this, Tim?
They can reach out to me at any time. I'm the man in charge of that, but Jennifer Burrows leads our section, and it there's always stuff that's on there. It's listed throughout the calendar for the event. If anybody would like to plan that, they could reach out to me as well.
I've
put it out there in several different areas, but any questions or anybody like to get involved in that, they feel free to reach out to me at Tim Baker at PGA.com. And it's going to be a good event. They get tea gifts, lunch. I always put out a light breakfast for everybody. They'll play in their event. Gary's out there. Gary always hits shots for everybody on one of the par threes. And for those of you that may not know Gary Koch, he's very famous for, I would say the biggest thing is Tiger's putt on 17 at Sawgrass. If y'all remember that from the very back of the green that
most.
Went down.
Yeah.
Better than most.
Mm-hmm.
That's Gary Koch. He's also the oldest player to ever qualify for U.S. Senior Open, by the way.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Tim, all I remember him doing is beating us at Old Memorial, like twice, you know, like he'd win the chapter championship and then the senior chapter championship.
He was my partner in the senior junior last month. And that guy can still hit it, man. He's amazing. But better than his golf game, he's a better human being than anything.
Oh, it's great stuff. Great stuff. Did you think 10 years ago, 15 years ago, like your career path and sort of like, I think it's always funny sort of what we start off getting into the program for, becoming PGA members, and then sort of where our career takes us a little bit. Did you kind of always target charity stuff, or was this kind of like just part of the high of your growth or whatever you want to call it? Or
no.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly didn't think, I mean, at such a young age, you're just thinking, wow, I want to be a golf pro. I want to be able to play golf, right? As a real youngster. Then you get in and you learn the whole other business side of things into it. Right. And it's pretty cool. I mean, you're running a business. I mean, it's one aspect of a country club, but it's in its own operation. As I started serving on the board, or, you know, as a chapter officer, I realized that I had the opportunity to make a difference or make an impact on people's lives. And as you go through and you do that, you really start to realize there's no better feeling than being able to help somebody else achieve their dream, their goal, whatever it may be. So as I kept going through it, I was like, you know, I really want to use my opportunity as a golf professional to make a difference or an impact in people's lives, not just at my own facility, but how can I help people outside of my facility? So this has been my big undertaking and is very important to me, and it means a lot to me. And you definitely have to care to do this because you're not paid to do this.
Right.
You know, You got to want to do it. And, you know, I'm just very blessed to have met Gary through this process, and his foundation to partner with us to, you know, enrich people's lives and help make it better.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff.
I think it's something that T-Mac and I come from, Tim, meaning like we worked together at Silverado. We worked for a gentleman named Brantley Smith. And my little story is just that I was sitting inside a church, you know, on a Sunday, and the pastor asks, like, what can you do outside the four walls of this church to make a difference in your world? And I literally am sitting on the pew, and I'm supposed to listen to the message, and I'm writing down, like, what do I do well? Oh, I run golf tournaments well. And then I went into Brantley, you know, Monday morning, and I said, hey, Brantley, I want to change our mission statement of Silverado, and I want to make it, you know, the community golf course in East Pasco County. And then we ended up running, you know, 30 events a year. We had a David Ruderman Foundation tournament. T-Mac, was on my staff. We worked together, and every Saturday it seems like we had something. And it was it doesn't matter if it's for the girls softball team of Zephyr Hills or for the Meals on Wheels.
Correct.
Or the, kid, like you said, the high school kids that need some money for going to college. It doesn't matter, but it just feels so good. And we can affect a lot of people because we're good at organizing. We're good at getting people together. We're good at planning, kind of all the parts of the PGA world that they don't tell you when you're going through the, you know, level one, level two, level three, like what, you know, hey, you got to do 35 jobs every day.
Yeah.
And these are part of it, you know?
Well,
so, I like hearing that in your voice.
Yeah.
And that's cool that you've been able to find something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's the amazing thing about the industry of the PGA is that, the giving back is really, you know, more about what this organization is than it is taking, if that makes sense. I mean, you're supposed to give back, and you know, I played a lot of sports, baseball, football, and all those things. And I played a lot of tournaments and all those things, but there wasn't really any tournaments where it was giving back to a child or a family in need. It was typically it was for, you know, kids to get their own shirts or jackets or equipment. But this is an industry where people are putting things on to help their fellow neighbor, which is, I think, amazing in its own right.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And, you know, the guy who's currently the man there is, I talked about Fred Curtis. You know, I don't know if you guys know this, but he is hosted an event partnered with SOWF, which is Special Operation Warrior Foundation.
Hmm.
And last year they finally eclipsed their mark and they raised over $1 million.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
For SOWF over all these years. And he's a man that I reached out to when I started this. Said, Fred, you know, how have you done this over all these years?
Hmm.
You know, and he gave me a lot of good insight. But, you know, think of that one club. They had a mission to change the lives. And what they do, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, is they give scholarships to children who have lost a parent, you know, fighting for our freedom.
Hmm.
Right.
So what a better feeling than that. And, you know, that's the thing. It goes so much further. You know, I'm doing a couple $1,000 in scholarships. Here's a guy in a club that got together that raised over $1 million last year to give back. I mean, so there's so many things you can do with the game of golf outside of just golfing, using golf to find ways to give back.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also talked to Fred Curtis at 41. He's not doing $1 million yet, right? Like all the charities, they take for 10 years to develop and build, and you know, it's a passion. You just keep going with it. It's great to hear that. What are you changing gears for a couple seconds? We want to try to let you go for the day because we appreciate you coming on. We always like to kind of talk some swing theory about, you know, sort of what you teach, sort of a couple of your fundamentals, maybe chipping, putting, short game. I know it's a really, really broad question, but as you know, we teach a lot, Tim and I, or T-Mac and I, and obviously the number one thing they always want to do is be more consistent, which is a terrible phrase to tell us because that doesn't give us anything to work with. And then the other one is, you know, well, I want to hit it longer. Well, how's your putting? I just want to hit it longer. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, short game matters. So just kind of if you could sort of give a listener, you know, a couple things that they come up to you first time, what are some of the things that you're going to look for? Or kind of, you know, habits that you have yourself that have, or you've learned from these other pros too.
It's so important for when a student walks away from a lesson that they're able to retain something from it. Yeah. Right.
Good point.
So I am huge on making sure that my students understand the cause and effect and ball flight laws.
Right.
I think they can learn so much from that while you're giving them a lesson and you're giving them different things to work on, that if they can understand what makes a golf ball start one way or the other, and then what makes it curve one way or the other, is so important for them to know what caused that.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's by far none the most important thing to me. And then we can start dipping into the finer detailed things, because they're then going to have an understanding of, if I did this, it caused this. Because let's be honest, everything's cause and effect in a golf swing. You do one thing that makes another thing happen.
Right.
So, but if you don't understand what that is, what does it matter? But nonetheless, if they can understand the ball flight laws, it's going to help them go a long way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's stuff that is one of my lines that you like to use, Tim, is I read a lot of different instructional books, and one of them is from Byron Nelson. In 1954, he's talking about with driver that you want to keep your head behind your right knee at impact. And it's just a simple image, but at delivery, head should stay behind the right knee at impact. And it helps people hit up on the ball. It helps you create better attack angle, lower spin rates. All that's great, but he already figured that out in 1954. And my point to you is, like, the ball flight laws haven't changed, you know, in the past 80 years. Like, it's the same.
Yeah.
So Yeah, if you understand the cause and effect of the club face and how it's working and the path and kind of what the club path actually is, and then we got a pretty good chance to hit it to that target out there. So, no, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sometimes I find that when I'm giving a lesson, every once in a while it turns into a little bit of a light mini physics lesson a little bit for people to understand that, you know, to hit down on, you know, when the ball's on the ground, you got to hit down. If it's up in the air, you got to hit it up, you know, and especially swinging in directions, that really gives them a good understanding of why something's going the way that it is, for sure. So, there's definitely a little bit of a science lesson that has to go into place a little bit for people to understand each lesson every time you're done a little bit, for sure.
It's such a common thing, too, because, again, you know, whatever, 70% of our students come to us because they slice the ball and they want to hit the ball, you know, more left, but all they do on the golf course is aim more left and make the slice worse, right?
Yeah.
So if you understood ball flight laws, that'd be a good start.
Correct.
You know? Yeah, you got to start with foundation first, too. So many things can be fixed before you even start swinging the club when it comes to grip, alignment, ball position, posture.
Sure.
So those are going to be the first things I look at. I hate to touch grip unless it's like horrendous. I try to always stay away from messing with somebody's grip, but I show them, you know, let's say you have a really strong right or left hand. I always pull their club up and have them reach their arms out. And the majority of the time, their club face is going to be very close. And I say, okay, do me a favor. I'm just going to take this club and tweak it. Okay, now it's square. You can grip it the same way. Put it down and hit it. They're going to say, this feels terrible.
Terrible.
So, trust me. Yeah. You got to trust me. Go ahead and hit it. All of a sudden, this person who hit it low and left hits it high and straight. Well, how that happened? Well, you just hit it with a square club face.
Good start.
Really, really good stuff. Tim, I just want to thank you for coming on. I think it's been a really good session. You know, a lot of good tidbits from your career and sort of your career path and family and charity and golf swing. So good to reconnect with you. Look forward to seeing you coming down in Florida maybe in January. And good luck with the job, because I think that's a great opportunity. And Fred, like you said, is one of the better, better pros we have had in our section. And he's kind of a legend, but you'll fill his shoes. You'll do great.
Yeah, without a doubt. Thank you both, Tim and Sean. I appreciate you and the time. And if you guys ever need anything, you know where to find me.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Thank you. So once again, want to thank everybody, all our Dynamic Podcast listeners. Thank you again. So thank you, and we'll see you soon. Bye.